This is Akashvani. In the program Spotlight, now we bring you a discussion on Sri Lanka's parliamentary election. The participants are Meera Shankar, former ambassador, and Dr. Ahmed Muyoon Farooqi, Prasar Bharati's special correspondent, Colombo. The moderator is Rajesh Lake.
Parliamentary elections were held in Sri Lanka on November 14, 2024, to elect 225 members to the new parliament. The 16th Parliament of Sri Lanka was dissolved on September 24, 2024. To discuss the elections, the results, significance and challenges, it's my pleasure to welcome Ambassador Meera Shankar, former ambassador to the US and Germany, and Dr. Ahmed Farooqi, special correspondent, Prasar Bharati, to the studios of Akashvani. A warm welcome to both of you.
Thank you and good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. Ambassador Shankar, this question is directed to you. The result of the election was described as a landslide victory for the left-wing National People's Power Coalition, headed by recently elected President Dissanayake. Now, the NPP has won 159 seats, more than any Sri Lankan political party in history, and the second highest proportion of seats in the nation's history. What I would like to know is the significance of this landslide victory to the political, economic and social scenario in Sri Lanka.
It's a definite mandate which has been given to Anura Dissanayake to bring about the fundamental change that people were seeking when they overthrew the Rajapakse regime. It's a two-third majority, so President Dissanayake would have the required numbers to bring about the constitutional reform that he is seeking and also the economic reforms that might ease the burden on the day-to-day cost of living for ordinary people in Sri Lanka. Because though the economy has stabilized under the leadership of Ranil Wickremesinghe, the debt crisis still looms because the debt burden is over $55 billion and the cost of living, while inflation has come down, it had risen so much at the peak that that cumulative impact is still being felt by people. Sri Lanka is dependent on the IMF loan, and how Anura will either renegotiate the tough conditions or continue with it as it is will obviously impact the economic situation, but they are not in a position to actually go back on the IMF bailout because they still need to stabilize their overall balance of payments and their debt repayment schedule.
So what you mentioned about two-thirds majority being enjoyed now by President Dissanayake, the two-thirds majority enables or does it enable reforms to take place, such as reforms that would reduce the cost of living and possibly abolish the executive presidency?
Yes, because they would need a two-third majority to bring about constitutional changes. And so this puts Anura in a stronger position to abolish the executive presidency, perhaps move to a more parliamentary form of governance or bring about the other changes that he's seeking, because Sri Lanka needs to restructure its economy. If you recall, you know, the crisis occurred because after the Easter bombing, tourism fell in Sri Lanka. And then that was followed by COVID, so a further fall in tourism. And the cost of fuel had gone up with the Ukraine war. So the day-to-day imports of fuel were becoming impossible for Sri Lanka. And the Rajapakses had told the people that because they couldn't import fertilizer, that everybody should shift to organic farming, which led to a collapse in the crops and a real scarcity of food items in Sri Lanka. So I think they need to look at how they will restructure their agriculture, make their economy less import dependent or less dependent on a single service like tourism. Now, these are aspects which are going to take time and would require a consensus, and that Anura has. He has the support of people even in the Tamil majority areas in the north and east. He has won, beating some of the local Tamil parties. In the east, other than the district of Batticaloa, his alliance has taken all the districts. In the north, they have taken both the districts of Jaffna and Wani. And again, in the central province, where the Tamil plantation labor is there in quite a substantial number, he has won over the local Tamil party. So this is a signal that there is a window for a new kind of politics which gives space and recognizes the rights of all communities in Sri Lanka. And Anura had promised during his campaign in the north and the east that he will take steps to return the land belonging to the Tamils, which is still held by the government or its agencies. And that, I think, was a major factor in winning him the support in these areas. We have to see how far he moves on that, and also whether he is willing to move on getting the provincial councils up and running and devolving power, because they've been more or less defunct. So these are all questions which we have to wait and see. But there is a historic mandate and opportunity for Anura Dissanayake to actually restructure the Sri Lankan economy and polity in the interest of the Sri Lankan people.
So you mentioned there is a new kind of politics on the anvil now, given that the coalition has received significant backing from minority Tamil-dominated regions in the north and east. So what are the tasks which are cut out for President Dissanayake? Dr. Faruqi, I would like to know from you, what is it that he has to give significance to while going forward? What is it that he will address first?
You see, there have been several issues that they have promised during the election campaign as well as mentioned in their manifesto as well. Some of them were primarily targeted towards the cost of living crisis, which the common man, the middle class, was going through. This is something which has had a huge impact over the last 2 years. Although inflation has stabilized and normalized to zero level now as compared to 70% witnessed in 2022 at the peak of the economic crisis, but the effect of the inflationary rise is visible even to this day. And that is something which has impacted people in rural as well as urban areas. And the steps that President Dissanayake had mentioned during the election campaign, they resonated well with the people across the island. He has talked about SOE reforms. He has talked about a complete radical change in the way the government would function. He has talked about food security as well as initiating investigations into past actions, past acts of omission and commission by previous regimes in ways which have been termed as corrupt. There have also been talks of a complete change with regard to how system of accountability will be brought in, and talk of an executive presidency being taken away and bringing in more of democratic system into Sri Lanka's structure. Now, to begin with, the government will definitely initially start with a work towards the presentation of budget. And it may be recalled that going into the year 2025, a budget was to be presented in November. But as the parliament was dissolved, the new parliament will convene on 21st of November, that is next Thursday. And that will be when they will be presenting a vote on account. And in the next sitting in February or March, they will discuss ways to go ahead for the next year by presenting a budget. And it is also likely that several reforms may be initiated during that same session as well.
So, Ambassador Shankar, would you like to add that what are the tasks that the president will take up first?
Well, I think that what Dr. Faruqi has said is something I agree with. They have the immediate tasks of actually presenting the budget, forming the government, taking decisions on what policy changes, political changes they are going to give priority to in terms of their own agenda. And the fact is that none of these people have had prior experience of government, because it's a relatively new party, a new formation, and they have really never been in government, unlike Vikramasinghe's party or the Rajapakse's party. They have had experience for a long time of running government in Sri Lanka. But I think the people have given the mandate that they are actually fed up with traditional politics in Sri Lanka, and they want to give a chance to some grouping which is talking of fundamental change, fundamentally changing the way that politics operates in Sri Lanka. Now, we have to see that this fundamental change also doesn't become cloak for an autocratic form of government, especially because the mandate is so large and so definite, and other parties have been more or less decimated other than Premadasa's party, which has 40 seats. It means that there's an extra burden on President Dissanayake to proceed in a way in which he consults with everybody before bringing radical changes into the constitution or the economy. I think that process of consultation across the aisle would be important.
Two things have come up from your comments. One, that there is going to be a budget which will be drawn out. And the second is that President Dissanayake's rise marks a shift from the dominance of family-led parties, and that consultative politics, consultative consultations between Council of Ministers henceforth will take prominence. If that be the case, and since we are talking, both of you agree with the budget part of it, there is IMF 2.9 billion bailout, which was initiated. GDP contracted by 7.3% in 2022, and it came to 2.3% in 2023. So what will happen if he were to tweak the IMF program to reduce income taxes and increase welfare spending for the poor? At what expense will he do that?
Look, he will have to renegotiate with the IMF. I think initially there was some apprehension that he might actually do away with the IMF bailout, which would have led to continuing economic instability and prolonged the crisis. But I think he has signaled that he's not seeking to do away with the IMF bailout, but that he may renegotiate some of the harsher conditions. So what the outcome will depend on how the discussions with the IMF go. And I think that given the kind of mandate that he's got, the IMF may also not be completely negative on renegotiating some of the conditionality.
So what about the relationship with the neighbors, particularly India, Dr. Faruqi? Will they improve? Will other factors come into play and the relationship between Sri Lanka and India improve further, and we will have more collaborations going forward?
You see, India and Sri Lanka have been civilizational twins. We have had connect between the people of both sides over 5,000 years across. And this is something which is very, very important, as it binds people on both sides. Now, the bilateral relations have had a very positive development. However, it is expected that the same thing will continue under the new government also. And it was visible when External Affairs Minister had visited Sri Lanka as the first visiting foreign affairs minister from any country to visit Sri Lanka after President Anuradha Kumara Dissanayake took office. And this was something which showed how much importance India places on Sri Lanka, and now it is expected that the president might also visit India as his first port of call. Now, this is something which will further reinforce the relations between the two countries.
On that note, just want to add that Mr. Dissanayake, at the commencement of his innings, described the unity of Sinhalese, Tamils, Muslims and all Sri Lankans as the bedrock of the new beginning. He can now build on this unity. Thank you so much, Ambassador Meera Shankar, for being with us, and Dr. Ahmed Faruqi for being with Akashvani.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on Sri Lanka's parliamentary election. The participants were Meera Shankar, former ambassador, and Dr. Ahmed Muyoon Faruqi, Prasar Bharati special correspondent, Colombo. The moderator was Rajesh Lake. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.